Howard, we asked about the situation where the patient has metastatic disease to the bone, but they're asymptomatic. They respond to abiraterone, but then start to have PSA progression. A lot of the audience, if the patient was symptomatic, would continue the abiraterone in spite of the PSA increasing. But 21% would test for ARV7, Howard. How do you think through the situation of a patient who's progressing on abiraterone and enzalutamide, and particularly, are you using ARV7?
Well, the first question is, what is the real progression? Patients had an initial response. Let's say the PSA was first diagnosed in the range of 100, and now it's gone down to 5 or 1, and it's rising very, very slowly. This is a patient we would continue to monitor. This was a real problem in many of the early protocols because we were mandated if they hit the milestone of PSA progression, however it was defined, we were mandated to stop treatment. And we worked through this very carefully as a community, the prostate cancer research community, in the working group 2 guidelines, which says that you have the option to monitor a patient when the PSA is rising. And you know, several patients of mine with our early abiraterone experience did not show signs of overt progression for upwards of 2 or 3 years. So this is not trivial. In a patient who is, let's say, having real progression, we really can't predict if they will respond to a second hormone or not. And this is the place where there actually now is a formal test that is covered by CMS, which is to test for ARV7. There are a number of different assays out there. In some cases, individuals will go directly to chemotherapy, which I would say is not wrong. But there is data now where you can show that the result of the ARV7 test is used. You can identify patients who will not respond to the second hormonal agent, who should be getting a taxane, and that's been shown to impact on survival.
Oliver, ever the creative thinker, I was very curious when I saw this answer, high-dose testosterone.
Well, you know, the Hopkins guys have influenced me. They've infiltrated into my brain, and now I'm starting to echo what they say. And, you know, the thing that's been absolutely amazing to me, this high-dose testosterone, which I initially saw it, I thought was absolutely crazy. It must have been the stupidest idea that somebody had a nightmare about and tried to decide to bring it to clinical trial. I have been amazingly impressed in this situation with where we've used it on trial. We were part of the Transformer trial, which Hopkins led, Hopkins initiated. We joined in, put a few patients on. We're now actually using it off trial. And some of these patients are having really pretty astounding responses, and they feel good.
What's the actual agent and the dose?
What I'm using is the same thing that the Hopkins guys, with a little variation. So it's 400 milligrams of testosterone cypionate IM. Now, they've been using pretty consistently Q4 weeks, and I've shortened it up to Q3 for a reason that I could talk about with Emmanuel. But also, there's also the transdermal patch, which you can use and just take the T up to about 1,000 and keep it there.
Yes.
You probably know that at one point, a long time ago, high-dose estrogens were used to treat metastatic breast cancer. So is that kind of the same idea?
Same.
You know, it is a precedent, and that came and went, but it was very, very important in the old era to add in high-dose estrogen. The problem there were the clots. You know, because you do have an estrogenic activity leading to DVTs,
yeah, thrombosis, et cetera.
And that was problematic. With the high-dose T, we've not seen clots. And in fact, the side effect profile is remarkably good. Most people feel better.
No clinical flares?
Yes, it's certainly possible. But what we've tried to do is to pick the patient who is relatively asymptomatic, relatively low volume. I say have a little runway to have an opportunity that even if they get worse, that they're not going to suffer any clinical harm. And I really would be interested in hearing from Emmanuel if that's proper for me to ask.
Absolutely.
Because these guys have more experience than I do.
And also, Emmanuel,
and they've been the leaders.
There's a drug that's an impeded androgen that was used in breast cancer. Has that been tried in prostate cancer?
I don't think so. I'm not aware. I would just say that I would strongly discourage high-dose testosterone in the community. About 1/3 of patients have a dramatic and durable response. We do not know who those patients are. About 1/3 have no benefit, and about 20% you accelerate the disease, which can be very scary. So please don't do this at home yet.
That's a really great point. We showed that Howard, you and Emmanuel are using the ARV7 assay. We asked the audience, and 2/3 said they don't think there's enough data to use it. When we asked you all, actually you were kind of split, and I guess Oliver joined in thinking there's enough data. One other thing we asked you to touch on, and you know, this is coming up, pancreatic cancer, ovarian, you name it, MSI high disease. So we asked the faculty, are you doing MSI testing in metastatic prostate cancer? And you can see the answer is uniformly yes. Interestingly, multiplex genomic testing, and Emmanuel, when we get to your section on BRCA and PARP inhibitors, we'll talk a little bit about whether or not somatic assays like NGS can be helpful in identifying patients who might benefit from PARP inhibitors.